Hello, hello. This is Fernando Fiore, El Presidente, and you are listening to the Mouths of the South podcast on VerySouthTucker.com. Yole.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast. Matt Doyle joining us now on the Mouths of the South podcast.
And Alexi Lalas joins us right now,
bringing you the best coverage of Atlanta United FC. Paul Tenorio joining us now. Kristen Hennage on the Mouths of the South podcast.
The president of Atlanta United FC, Darren Eels.
Happy to have Doug Robertson on the Mouths of the South podcast, AJC writer for Atlanta United. The biggest names and exclusive interviews on the Mouths of the South podcast.
He'll do it again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Let's go. What is up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast, joined by the U.S. Soccer Beat guys. I am Eric Quintana, and with me is Will, Andrew, and boom, Aaron.
You did.
I always mix and match, and I always forget.
I think you get mine right.
How's it going, guys?
It's going good. It's going good.
All right, so obviously just getting out of the most recent World Cup qualifiers for the U.S. Men's National Team. You guys are a big part of the U.S. Men's National Team social media community.
Twitter sphere.
Yeah, you guys have a pretty good following. So let's talk about it a little bit. You know, your impressions of, I mean, I think Bruce Arena has shown exactly what he was brought in to do. And he's kind of checked off every check mark you could possibly think of in his tenure so far. I mean, give me your thoughts, guys.
I mean, just the fact that he came into this game with a plan, because he said he knew from the first day of camp what he was going to do in this Mexico game. That's why they played it in the second half of the Venezuela friendly. He knew what he was going to do, and it's just so much different than we've seen in the past with other managers about knowing who was going to play where, what players were going to need to be doing in the formation. He came in with a plan, got it done, and that's what we brought him in for. It's exactly what we brought him in for.
Omar Gonzalez said the first day at camp, he sat everybody down and showed them the roster, showed them the starting 11s that were going to be done for both games, assuming there's going to be no injuries. He showed them the formations, showed them the 11. He said, this is what we're doing. Be ready.
Well, it's like the analyst said, there's nobody in U.S. soccer that knows CONCACAF more than Bruce Arena. Like, he knows CONCACAF inside and out. He's been through the process. He knows it. So, I mean, CONCACAF's just a different animal, and there's a security blanket with Bruce Arena, knowing that he's been through it before. Nothing's really going to surprise him. It's just that safety net of knowing what you're doing in this qualifier.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the results that he's gotten already so far. We're six games in, and we're sitting pretty well. I mean, we'll see what happens in the games on Tuesday. But you could almost already say that he's come in to do what we brought him in to do, which was get to the World Cup. Like, we're already sitting above that threshold, and we're looking pretty good with the remaining games that we have left.
Yeah, I mean, the last two games, especially against Trinidad and Tobago, I thought this team looked pretty damn good. And then Mexico, again, I think I share a lot of sentiments across the entire U.S. men's national team community, in the sense that you saw that starting 11, you're like, oh my gosh, what the hell, Bruce Arena? What could you possibly be thinking with this lineup? And of course, everyone's initial thought was bunker, but man, these were not the players you thought you'd be bunkering with.
Correct. I mean, and it goes to show it, with formation change, you can really play defensively, or you can play really any formation with any group of players if you coach them right and if they actually know what they're supposed to be doing. And credit to them, they came out with a game plan. You know, I saw a lot of fans on Twitter were not thrilled with us having 25% possession against Mexico. Some people are saying it's embarrassing.
That's a typical game in Azteca,
yeah,
though.
And I say, when in that type of environment, you know, you come in and you get a point, you don't complain.
It was so weird looking at Twitter for the first, when the starting lineup came out, because the way U.S. Soccer does it is they list it like in order of in the numbers instead of like a formation.
That drives me
insane.
So
I was sitting there trying to figure out what we were playing. So I was like, okay, Omar Gonzalez and Jeff Cameron playing center. Wait, is that Tim Ream too? And wait, it was cool. I was just, me and William were actually in the car together at the time, and we were just going through the different names. We're like, okay, if he plays here, then he's playing here. But where does that put DeMarcus Beasley at? And eventually, we finally figured it out.
For a while, I thought Bruce had completely lost it and just thrown him up on the left wing like the old days, and I was kind of scared.
I don't know that I was more surprised at the formation or just the overhaul of the lineup itself. Like that, I didn't know what to be outraged about. Was I outraged about what the potential formation was going to be, or was I outraged that, why are all these subs coming in? Like, where are all these people coming from? Why are they playing in the biggest game in World Cup qualifying?
There is the factor of there's a very short turnaround, because Mexico does have to go to the Confederations Cup
But we didn't care. We didn't care about that.
I understand
that. We didn't care about that, and we thought, all right, well, we're playing Mexico. We're going to send out our best starting 11, which include Nagby, which include who else am I missing right now?
Fabian Johnson.
Yeah. I mean, there were guys.
That was
Tim Howard.
Across the board, you thought, what the hell, Bruce?
I mean, yeah. I understand why he didn't play the same players in both games, why he chose. I mean, again, he got the results, so we can only say so much in hindsight. But thinking about it before, you do wonder why he picked the players he did for the Trinidad game compared to the players he picked for the Mexico game, knowing that he wasn't going to play the same players in both games.
Well, here's the credit I will give Bruce Arena. Evidently, he did tell the players that, look, this is what we're going to do. We're going to play what we'll call the best starting 11 against Trinidad and Tobago, ensure that we have those points. And against Mexico, we're going to play, you know, the guys like Paul Areola and Tim Ream and Guzan. We're going to play those guys, and that's just how it's going to be.
Yeah.
We're not changing that. And apparently he said that, I want to say, 2 weeks before these games happened.
Yes,
here's the thing, and yet this is what I like. And you heard Jeff Cameron, I think it was Jeff Cameron say it earlier today, that you know he appreciated the fact that they knew going in what exactly they were going to be asked to do, and that wasn't the case under Klinsmann almost ever, to the point where they would almost get to the game and still not know who was starting, still not know what the real game plan was, which is a shock considering you're a national team coach.
At that level,
and you're trying to get back into the World Cup. I mean, how do you not go in with a specific game plan? It's beyond me, to be honest.
It goes to show you that the players have really bought into what Bruce is doing. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like Klinsmann never had a plan or he was just winging it all the time. And maybe he was. I don't know. I mean, we weren't in the locker room, but you could tell there's a difference, because even Klinsmann tried to switch up the formation. It just failed miserably. But, you know, when Bruce did the same thing, and actually people were comparing him doing this, like, oh, he's going all Klinsmann on us.
I did the same thing.
Yeah, but the difference is when you have players that buy into the system, then it changes the overall outcome of it.
I still remember there was a time, I think it was one of Will Trapp's first ever caps. Will Trapp came on, and he probably shouldn't have said it after the game, but he said he had no idea what he was supposed to be doing. Klinsmann just put him in there and basically said play. Like, he had no idea what he was supposed to do in the formation, what roles he had. Klinsmann just threw him in there. You could tell on this team yesterday, they knew exactly what they were going to do, because you could see with the three center backs, when one would step, the other two would cover whoever was stepping. And it was just all very organized. It all worked out. And, like, pretty much during the entire game, there was only a few times where I really, really felt pressured. Like, I felt pretty comfortable the whole time, other than, obviously, the last few minutes. And there was a time around the 60th minute
And that's more. If you go back and look at the game, you're obviously not as stressed out because, one, you know the score. But, you know, in that moment, you're much more stressed out than after the fact or anything like that. It didn't look as bad after the fact as it did, you know, during the middle of the heatness.
I saw after the game they only had one shot on target. Obviously
I think it's the goal, right?
Yeah, it was the goal. They had, you know, the free kick off the post
that was a nice shot.
Which is funny to me that it's not a shot on target.
Yeah.
I get why it's not, but it's still funny to me.
Yeah, I think it probably should.
That's not counted as a shot on target, but here's my thing, is that they obviously created Mexico created a lot more chances, and obviously when you have more of the possession, usually that's the case. We talk about Atlanta United, that's obviously not the case sometimes. But
in general, Mexico has the more creative players in the attack. They have better players, especially in that game. They were going to create more.
And they move the ball very well from one side to another. They move it quickly. I mean, they're a solid team. It's not like, you know.
Well, and here was my worry the entire time we were sort of – I was discussing this with guys on Dirty South Soccer and just friends of mine, is that, look, Mexico, everyone that plays Mexico bunkers against Mexico, including us.
Yeah.
They know how to break this stuff down. They deal with it all the freaking time. Why would we, and this is what kind of pissed me off, why would we continue to do the same thing that they're so good at doing, especially against us, especially at home? Why not try to take the game to them? And I think Michael Bradley kind of set the tone early, or as early as possible, by not only getting the steal, being at the receiving end of the steal at midfield, but going ahead and taking that chance and getting a shot on, I mean, chipping the keeper from what, 40 yards out?
Yeah, yeah. I don't think people realize how hard that is.
That was impressive.
Like that's not an easy thing to do.
Go out onto the soccer field and just try to, no goalie, no nothing, just try to kick it into the goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just by itself. That's hard.
He knew exactly what he was doing because it wasn't like Ochoa was way too far out and he was running trying to get back. Ochoa was where he thought he should be. Michael Bradley saw that in a split second and then hit an inch perfect shot into the corner.
Yeah, and it's not as if, you know, yeah, it's not as if he really chipped it. Like, when you look at the trajectory of the ball, it's like right in between what would be a chip and a regular shot. And that's so hard to do because he had to hit it hard. But he had to hit it hard enough where it would come down and get over his head and go into the goal. I mean, like, he really had to hit it perfectly because Ochoa was not that far away from the ball.
And he made it look so effortless,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look. Let's be real though. A lot of those goals are usually look effortless.
Yeah.
A lot of those goals that from, you know, way beyond outside the box that look like they just float over the keeper, they all look. I'm giving Bradley credit, don't get me wrong, yeah, but at the same time, I think they all kind of look like that. Yeah. That's just me saying that though.
But I will say this, that goal changed the whole dynamic of the game in the sense that I don't think either team really felt comfortable in the game. I think that kind of shook Mexico a little bit. It forced them, you know, to kind of get disoriented and stuff. And even after they scored their goals, I never really felt like either team settled. And I made the comment that I didn't think that either team was comfortable at the pace that they were playing. Like, I never got the feeling that either team grabbed a hold of the game, yeah, and settled it down.
That goal did so much for the mentality because we all know the history of games at the Azteca, the fact that we'd only taken results twice before that, the fact that we were perfectly happy with the draw, and just scoring early. I think we ran a Twitter poll, and I believe about 55% of the people said we were going to win the game, and I sent them a text saying, if I had half the optimism in life as those people do, I'd have a much better life. And just, I had very low expectations going into the game. I was really hoping we could hustle out a draw. I was perfectly content with that. And when Michael Bradley scored that goal, my entire mindset changed of what we could do in that game.
Let's try to steal the win.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, dear Lord, we gotta hold on for 90 or 85 more minutes. Let's gotta hunker down. This is going to be a stressful
Oh,
game.
That's what I thought, too. I was like, please don't try to bunker this and the rest of this match because that's not going to happen. They're going to score. And
then we're going to be back on our toes. But
yeah.
No, the crazy thing was I was so shocked when the goal came in. I didn't even react for a minute. I just kind of sat there and stared at my TV for like a solid 5 seconds as Aaron's running around.
I was yelling really loudly.
And then I yelled, but I was so shocked when it actually went into the goal. It was.
I remember seeing the ball going, and in my head at the time, it seemed like the ball was traveling so slow.
Yeah, me
and
too.
Every single time I've watched a replay, I swear it's going fast forward because I just remember at the moment.
It was so, it glided into forever.
Like very slowly into the goal. And it was shot.
The crazy part about it was it went from a relatively innocuous, you know, part of the game to a goal like that. And it was just like they have the ball around midfield and then all of a sudden it's a goal. And it's like, whoa, where did that come from?
And
it was Michael Bradley of all people. He decided to play his first forward pass or play it forward for the first time in God knows how long. But glad he picked a good time to do it.
But scoring a goal like that against Mexico changes the game so much more at the Azteca than it does even if it was in America, just because the crowd at the Azteca is so overly pessimistic and they become almost hostile towards their own team.
Well, you saw that they were leaving,
yeah,
like with 5 minutes to go, yeah, and they had all the possession.
And it's a very tough audience. They expect their team to be just simply better than they are. And
the longer they're down, too, yeah. I mean, the crowd, and we've seen it at the Dome, the longer a game goes where they're down or they're not winning,
yeah,
the uglier and more violent it becomes.
I mean,
and
it's like a two-year-old trying to, it's like, you know, depriving a two-year-old of sleep. The longer it goes, they just start throwing things more and more.
Tim Herb on the Facebook Live feed, and if you're joining us on the Facebook Live, make sure to send us questions. We'll be happy to answer them. With the U.S. Soccer Feed guys here. If you're on the recorded version, just send us questions via email at motspodcast@gmail.com. Tim Herb says, I guess he meant to say this team, where these teams seem so much more cohesive under Arena, which shocks me. And that's the one thing that we've sort of hit on a little bit is how well they look under Bruce Arena and how he's had them do exact. Look,
I just think it's all about buying in.
I'm one of those guys now with the U.S. men's national team under Bruce Arena. It's the same mindset I have with Tata, and Tata I trust.
Yeah.
You know, whatever he ultimately says. Now, the last two results for Atlanta United obviously haven't been great, but you still trust the player selection. You still trust his ability to you trust his game plan, at least early on right now, and you trust that come the window, he's going to make some good choices. He's going to try to recruit some players that are going to really change the dynamic of this team a little bit, at least maybe in the midfield. But when it comes to the U.S. men's national team, it's something we're not used to. We haven't been used to for the longest time.
Now, having said that, I mean, I've never been uncomfortable with Bruce in a CONCACAF setting. It's the next step that I get kind of murky on, the World Cups. Because I guess my last taste of, you know, the last taste in my mouth of the Bruce Arena World Cup was the disaster in 06.
Yeah.
And that was probably the worst, aside from 98, was the worst World Cup I had ever seen.
What I will say, though, is when Bruce Arena first got announced as coach, a lot of the people talking were saying, it's not going to be pretty, he'll play 4-4-2, he's not going to change, he's going to pick his guys. He showed he's willing to change last night. I mean, the fact that he played the 5-4-1, which who knows the last time he's done that. He never did it for the Galaxy, as far as I know. But the fact that he was willing to change shows me there really is something to Bruce Arena other than just the, okay, we're just going to put him in, get us the World Cup just so we don't miss the World Cup. We'll worry about 2022.
Well, and something else that needs to be said about Bruce Arena taking over this group is a lot more talented than groups he's had before. Like, individual talent, like, he never had... I know he had Landon Donovan, and I know DeMarcus Beasley and all those guys were really talented, but you don't have, like, Christian Pulisic, like, there's your guy.
Jesus, soccer Jesus over there. No, and that's why I was so kind of bummed that I saw that we were clearly going to try to bunker, because, you know, here we have the best attacking...
He's the best player on the field.
Front. Well, we have the best attacking players we've had in such a long time, and in a position where they can legitimately go into Mexico and possibly steal 3 points. You know, how do you not at least attempt, you know? Again.
It's so crazy.
You proved me wrong, yeah. But.
It's like, even when he has a bad game, when he gets the ball in space, you stop what you're doing.
And watch.
And you stand up and you watch and you hold your breath.
I mean,
because
I wasn't.
It's just, something's going to happen. Because he's just another level of athlete. Once he gets the ball, it doesn't matter who's in front of him. He's going to make something happen. And then there was two times in particular when he just kind of takes the ball and goes on one of those little runs. And next thing you know, one time he had a through ball that almost came off, and then he took that shot in the, I guess it was the 89th or 90th minute.
Yeah.
And it's just like, man.
I know may get pushback for this. I don't know. But Pulisic does things that even a mature Donovan didn't do. I mean, I feel way more confident with Pulisic at 18 on the ball than I did even Landon in his prime. Like, I just always feel like he knows what he's going to do. And I'm not saying that Landon didn't know what he was going to do. But I don't know. I just have a different level of trust with Pulisic. Maybe it's because he has better attacking talent around him. I don't know. But there's not been a player with his technical quality in the U.S. men's national team ever. I can't think of one.
Now, to go off that question, a lot of people were talking on Twitter, are we sticking with this three-back formation or five-back or whatever you want to call it, three center backs, or are we going to go back to what we did before? Because when you look at it, this was not his best game. And it's hard to say, you know, obviously we're going to have to build a team around him if that's just what's going to happen.
Yeah, no, he's got to be the centerpiece.
He is the centerpiece. Is there, you know, how are we going to put that in?
Here's the thing, and this is where tactics can vary even within a formation. The way we set up against Mexico was never going to allow Pulisic to do much. I mean, he was going to have to individually create everything. You know, he was just the outlet from the back to the front, and it's like, okay, pick the ball up in the middle and go. and he was kind of on an island by himself in the middle. Whereas in games where we're not sitting back, you can still play that formation, but, you know, go more attacking with it.
That's why I don't think that the 5-4-1 is necessarily the answer for the U.S. I think in games, like if we're playing against Mexico or if we're in, say, the World Cup next year and we're playing against Germany again, I think it can be the answer in those kind of games. But I don't think Pulisic had a great game last night. I don't think he was set up to have a very good game. Again, he did have those moments. I think in that formation, unless we play it more of the way a Chelsea plays it with a 3-4-3 where you have Hazard like on the wing, if we put him in that position, he'd have a better chance. But in the 5-4-1, what we played yesterday, unless we actually push those players up, then that's just not the best formation we're going to have, especially in CONCACAF.
Because even like the Mexico game, when, like I said, when he picks the ball up, he's running at more defenders. Like we don't have people making runs in behind and overlapping. It was basically him and Bobby Wood and Areola to an extent, but they weren't. There was not. It was just like, okay, go make something happen out of nothing.
Right.
And I mean, he's fully capable of it, and I don't worry about that. But and he could do that against better teams. But
look, I liked exactly what he did. He kind of went out there and tried the best he could to boss people around a little bit.
Now, yeah, I mean, that's not going to yield you much success over the course of a game. Yeah. It's just you got to make something out of nothing.
He almost did win us the game in the 80-whatever minute that was where he shot and just it curled around the bar. Like, he almost still won us the game with Pulisic a little opportunity. Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I've noticed about Pulisic, and this kind of speaks to a bigger picture. I know we all like to anoint people the next thing, the next leader, the next this, but a lot of players don't ever accept that as easily, be it personality traits, or they could be the next thing. They just don't have that outspokenness about
them. Right.
He has gone in the last, 2 years? When did he make it? It was last summer.
Last
summer. Yeah.
If you look at him and his whole demeanor and just presence from last summer to this year, he's gone from kind of a standoffish,
just a kid.
Yeah. To, all right, I'm going to take the reins. I'm going to call out. I'm going to guarantee a victory against Mexico. Nobody ever does that. Seriously. And none of us thought he was crazy. And then you just look at his overall demeanor on the field, like even that miss that you're talking about in the final minutes, like he was visibly frustrated, like outwardly frustrated. And I never really thought I saw that kind of player in him before. Not that it's a bad thing. And then when he got subbed off, where he turned around and yelled at the guys, "Come on, let's go, like let's fight." And it's like, man, he's taken that. Okay, I'm the guy, to I'm really the guy within the locker room. And that's just something that's impressed me with him.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you got to look at a couple players that you thought stood out the most, you know, give me those names.
Jeff Cameron's going to be the
big
one.
Yeah, for me, Jeff Cameron was the factor.
I mean, one of the
he was the factor.
One of the few criticisms you can even make about Jeff Cameron in that game was the fact he didn't step to Carlos Vela on that goal. But I believe that was more of the fact that for corners yesterday, Bruce Arena decided that we were going to put all three of our center backs in the box to try to score. When Bobby Wood missed that shot that led up to the goal, all three center backs had to sprint back faster than Chicharito, which is hard to do. I do believe he probably should have stepped, but what he did was...
Here's my thing. You could have avoided all that by Kellen Costa fouling.
Yeah, and the goal did go through Kellen Costa's legs, and which made it a lot harder.
Did it go through his legs? I didn't notice that.
I'm saying
he stepped towards
is if
it,
somebody megs me in our Tuesday league, I'm
that
probably taking
oh,
probably
no,
taking
you're talking about
down.
The meg.
The goal. The goal went through his legs. He went straight back.
How
and
did
he
I miss
it.
That?
He was standing basically, I don't know.
Here's what happened. Chicharito, after he passed it to Carlos Vela on the right side, he continued that very hard run to the middle. Matt Doyle did a piece on MLSsoccer.com about it, and he said it was like gravity. When Chicharito ran through, Acosta went to him, so did Jeff Cameron.
Yep.
If Jeff Cameron would have seen that Acosta was there, and he could have stepped to Carlos Vela, but he was so out of position, he was recovering. Again, that's the only bad thing I can say about Jeff Cameron pretty much the entire game. The number of clearance, like last second clearances he had,
He bailed out at least three players.
Oh, yeah.
I remember there was a cross game. Coming from the right, coming straight at Chicharito, and he dove and get it out for a corner. There's just so many different times that he bailed us out.
It's crazy. The mark of a good attacker is when they got the ball, it feels like they've got all the time in the world. When Jeff Cameron's playing defense, it's just like he's so composed. If he stabs, he gets the ball. You know, you never see him. You don't worry about him, you know, making a bad foul. He's just so under, you know, completely under control, making all the right plays. Now, he did give up. He did try to do some type of Cruyff Meg thing on a guy and about lost us the ball in a bad spot. Well, we got it back. But, I mean, other than that,
I don't know.
There were a lot of things that went wrong with there. I mean, yeah. you can partly blame Guzan for looking like he was maybe out of position. You could partly blame Beasley for going harder, I guess. You can blame Acosta for not fouling at midfield. You can blame Bobby Wood for whiffing and not scoring there. You can blame the three center backs who didn't step up. You can blame like a million people. And the fact that here's the one thing I'll say, the fact that Guzan is getting a ton of blame is beyond me right now. I cannot believe it.
Well, I mean, if you're a goalkeeper, and I've never played goalkeeper in my life, but if someone's cutting in, you automatically assume they're going to go far post, I think. So you start drifting that way. And then he hits a shot near low and near. And that's the other thing. We don't know what his sight line was.
In that small area was Michael Bradley, Chicharito, Kellen Acosta, Jeff Cameron, and DeMarcus Beasley. So he had those five people to deal with.
I think that Carlos Vela did a great job of getting that shot off real quickly. And Guzan, as soon as that shot was taken, Guzan was mid-jump. Little small jumps to get a cross goal. And I also thought he was expecting him to go to the right as opposed to cut it back inside or go near post.
Yeah.
And when that happened, he was mid-jump,
shot
happens, and he's off balance, and you're done.
When the goalies just think they're going to go back post, and it's just that split
second.
That's
part of these amazing saves you see where you see a keeper go from essentially one end to the other. That's half the reason they make those saves, because they anticipate.
Yeah.
It's anticipation. It's what it is. And so he anticipated wrong.
And it was a good shot.
I can't really blame. There's a lot of Laney United fans who are just crapping on Guzan today, and I'm not saying that he doesn't deserve some blame.
All it is confirmation bias. It's like everyone went into the game thinking, oh, well, we should be starting Tim Howard. Yep, there you go. That's why we should be starting Tim Howard.
I guarantee you, in this very same scenario, I don't know if Tim Howard gets that ball either.
Similar scenario in the DC United game. The third goal that they scored, he did the exact same thing. He's dribbled to the left, hit it with his
left
foot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Kahn did the exact same thing. He was expecting to go far post. Whoever was for DC, I can't remember his name, who scored the third goal.
The little guy.
Acosta.
Yeah. He hit it.
Luciano Acosta.
He hit it near post, and Kahn did the exact same thing. So you can't.
The reason why people blame the goalkeeper on those is because it's not a powerful shot, and it looks like you should be able to save it just based on the pace of the shot.
Yeah, it's just less pretty.
Yeah, but if you're flowing one way, you have people in front of you, and then they shoot it back the other way, it's low. I mean, it's not an easy shot. Like, you see that goal scored 100 times. It's not an uncommon goal. It just looks like it should be an easy save.
The other one for me is Kellen Acosta. To me, he should be a regular starter, in my opinion. And if U.S. men's national team want to go to a two-man defensive midfielder, include him in the picture. I'm sold with that.
I would, if we're looking long-term to next year, and I know they won't do it, I would start him over Michael Bradley.
Well, I think we can stick with the two, though.
You know it's not going to happen, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, was just throwing that out there.
I think we can stick with the two. I mean, you saw in the Trinidad game, Michael Bradley.
I don't mind it. I'll say that much.
Like, I was fine with. I mean, Kellen Acosta is probably the best number eight we have in the pool. Maybe if you put Danny Williams there, you can consider him that. But Arena already said that he wasn't really looking
because
into Danny Williams.
Because he gives you something going forward, which is something that Michael Bradley has never given you. Almost never given
unless
you.
Unless you're playing Mexico, strangely enough.
But, yeah. I mean, let's be real.
Yeah.
As awesome as that goal was, as important as influential as momentous as that goal was, as memorable as that goal was going to be for years to come, there's a lot of luck involved in that.
And
I'm not taking that away from because look, there's something to be said about, and I think it was Jeff Cameron that makes the tackle.
It was.
that goes to Bradley. Bradley recognizes the situation and hits the long ball. There's something to be said about recognizing that moment and being able to capitalize on it.
Is that somehow going to erase every other game that we've watched?
But that's, exactly. That's not going to happen.
We've all played soccer. I mean, if you intercept a pass in that area, the first thing you do is look up to see where the keeper is. Boy, if he had scored that second goal to hit off the post.
Oh, see, that to me was much more contrived.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not the right word because, I mean, this one was obviously contrived. You got the and Bruce, this is exactly what Bruce Arena wanted. He wanted that pressure in the midfield to get a turnover in that you know middle third and to immediately go forward.
You know what else annoys me about Michael Bradley is, and this is kind of more beyond soccer, is why has he become our guy, like our face, or, you know, he's kind of been.
Well, he's our face now because he scored that goal. I mean, he's gonna be that face for a while. And again, I'm not saying he shouldn't be that face based off that moment. I'm just like you said, it's not gonna erase the bad moments he's had in
but
other
that's all,
games.
But that's the other thing, and this kind of is the same argument with Jozy Altidore. Is you see these moments and you see these games where they played at such a high level. And then there's three or four games where they're just like, okay.
Against like St. Vincent and the Grenadines, and like, the hell, Michael, what the?
It's like, oh, I could go forward. Oh, no, I'm going to play it I'm going to play it backwards. I'm going to play it sideways. You know, I don't get it.
I mean, look, they should make a statue of that goal somehow. Oh, yeah. If they can make a statue of that moment or make some kind of, like, memorialize that moment, that is one of the greatest moments in U.S. soccer history I've ever witnessed, you know, on TV, but firsthand. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
And I mean, my reaction was that of crazy ass fan. I mean, I can't imagine what the scene was in Azteca, but at the same time, as much credit as I give to him, you know, I can't look at that moment alone and be like,
yeah.
I mean, for that he's earned. I'll say this: in the last couple of games. Here's the other thing: under Bruce Arena, he's looked a lot better because he's had a specific role. So, as much a little bit of crap as I'm giving him from the, I think. Really, the Michael Bradley that resonates with me most is the Klinsmann Michael Bradley. And this is a different Michael Bradley under Bruce Arena, which I love this Michael Bradley. I also love Kellen Acosta and what he did against Mexico and what he's, basically what he did against Mexico.
Doing,
what he was able to do, how he's able to contribute, how he's able to just be a defensive thorn in Mexico's side, especially centrally.
He's just good on the ball.
I mean, it was something that I feel like we've been missing. It was the Jermaine Jones without the craziness.
Yeah.
Without the out of positionness.
Going Jermaine Jones, But, no, I mean, that's just how, that's the nature of the beast when it comes to national teams. Because no player, other than, you know, I guess Michael Bradley now, is promised any more games, you know. And you can, like, you just don't know. You just don't know what's going forward. Kellen Acosta might be great right now. He seems to be playing at a level that's higher. You know, I'd love to see Danny Williams get a shot. But it's not looking like it. And right now, it looks like he's the best number eight we have. And I'd love to see him go forward. And we still got some young players. What's Emerson Hyman? I'd love to see him get another look.
Well, here's the thing. I think Michael Bradley's going to be, at least for the rest of this World Cup cycle, is going to be the guy. I think after this World Cup cycle, you're looking at Kellen Acosta possibly taking over full-time.
That
full-time. I don't know. It just depends on how things go in the World Cup, I guess. But again, here's the other thing. This is a much better Michael Bradley under Bruce Arena, a much simpler, more defensive minded, more distributive Michael Bradley under Bruce Arena. But how does that play out through the course of the rest of this World Cup cycle? And how does that go? How does that play into the actual World Cup? I mean, he could look like an all-star in the World Cup.
Yeah,
and so that'll carry over. I hope that happens. I really do.
That kind of happened with Jermaine Jones. I mean, honestly, for being honest, that probably took his career to this point because if he doesn't play out of his mind in the World Cup, do you think he makes it through the next few games, the next year or so where he doesn't play very well? He probably gets dropped, you know? And, I mean, and I'm a big Jermaine Jones fan, but that's probably why he's still around is because he played in an amazing World Cup.
Yep. All right. Any last things for about the U.S. men's national team you guys want to hit on before we switch gears to Atlanta United?
We're good.
Good. All right. So Atlanta United, obviously, much, much sadder story over the course of the weekend, losing to Chicago Fire 2-0. I was sad. I made very angry noises over the course of 45 minutes, especially in that second half. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, it sucks that we run a neutral Twitter account for these kind of games.
It's not really neutral when you live in Atlanta, right?
Okay. Right. Well, we have to at least give off the appearance that we're neutral. Like, I can't. Yeah, it was hard to be like, oh, Chicago scored. Yeah.
I saw a tweet pop up. It said, you know, Chicago scores 2-0 ! And I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, that's me.
Just doing the best just to not sound like you're living in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because we've gotten called out on that kind of stuff before, and I was just like, whatever. But no, it was an awful game. I don't even think it was a good game by either team. I thought overall it was a terrible game. I don't know if the wind played a factor. I don't know if, you know, obviously missing Almiron, we've seen most of the time, is never a good thing.
Well, here's the thing. It's not just missing. Look, if a team can, and DC United did this to us, and so that in combination with the mistakes we made on the defensive end, that's really what costs us the game, is if a team can take out Almiron in the middle, if they can just take out the middle completely, we're worthless on the wings.
Yeah. Well, see, in this game,
when it comes to crossing, when it comes to, I mean, obviously we've seen Gressel on the right with some moments, but a lot of the stuff Yamil does, it's usually cutting back inside into the middle. Gressel has, again, done amazing on that right side, and he's put together some good crosses into streaking players. But those are always moments where we're, you know, either on the break, or we have numbers, or we're pretty even, or everything is played up the field very direct and quick, and it's much faster than we saw in the last two games. That's my biggest concern over this team, is that if you can basically close down the middle of the field, force Atlanta United on the wings, and slow them down, we are out of the game completely. And the lack of visible adjustment by Tata Martino, in my opinion, was the most concerning part. And you finally saw, at least I saw one tweet, and I think it might have been in the Montreal game that I really saw, and it really struck home against Chicago Fire, is the tactical in-game adjustments were what kind of cost them against Barcelona and maybe a little bit with Argentina. I think Argentina was more just a product of bad luck than anything else. But we're starting to see that. I'm starting to see that a little more, I think. It's the lack of adjustments in-game is starting to become an issue for me, at least.
Well, and the other...
I mean, you've also got the mistakes that happened throughout the course of the game, but you got to overcome this mistake somehow with tactical adjustments, with something on the field.
Right. Well, a couple of things. In this game in particular, I think Almiron, if he was fully fit and everything, would have thrived, because the midfield was wide open this whole game. Like, the whole game, the game was so stretched. Like, that's why I have no idea why. It just felt like the game was it felt like the game was so open, and I think Almiron would have found so much space. I'm not saying we would have won. I have no idea. And I'm not even saying Almiron would have played well. But a game like that would have suited him more than a NYCFC game, or maybe even Montreal. I can't really remember that game all that much. But the specifics of it, at least.
Yeah.
Because in a game like NYCFC, you're playing in a small on a small pitch, obviously. And that was a game that Kinwin started, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And it's what I've said all along, and I've even made this point to you, is that when you start Kinwin, you have nobody that can stretch the field. So they can play a high line, which compacts the middle even more. So Almiron was having trouble finding any space. Whenever Kinwin plays, he can't find space in the middle. Whereas when you – even Vijaba, like, goal scoring and all that aside, the threat of him being able to get in behind and stretch a back line at least has to soften the back line enough to where – they have to respect that fact that he can get in behind. So in this game, the game was so stretched that Almiron would have been able to find pockets of space. And, you know, when Almiron's on the ball, he can make things happen. Like, that's the thing. When it's a lot like we talk about Pulisic. When he finds pockets of space to grab the ball and make and go forward, he's dangerous. And then secondly, I'm trying to remember what the other – oh, the adjustments. We've talked about this before separately. When you look at our bench, I don't – like, there's not a whole lot of really good options Like, when you're bringing on Kratz, it's like, okay, but what?
Here's the thing. I had high hopes for Kratz, though. I thought that he would, because of his, because when he's come in as a sub, he's shown that dynamic ability to get the ball, turn, and go forward rather quickly. I thought, okay.
But the problem is he doesn't give you anything more than any of the other players can get.
It's like a less fast version of Tito Villalba.
Yeah, it's like, okay, so you take off the fast guy, but you have the more, and it's like, okay, so you're kind of like taking some out of this hand to give to this hand.
Yeah.
So this hand doesn't have as much, but this hand has more. And it's like, okay, well, we're sacrificing somewhere. And like I've said, I don't know what subs that we have. And this is just a product of MLS and not being
salary
able
cap,
to
expansion team and all that stuff. I mean, here's the thing. This is why I'm looking forward to the transfer window, is because once that transfer window opens, I hope that we're looking at least some more bench players at key positions, or
I just want some players that have a specific, that may not be like great like to start in week in and week out, but that, like, even Kenwin's a good example of this. Like, Kenwin's not a guy that I want to start every week.
I don't want him on the 18 every week.
Right. But he gives you something unique.
Yeah.
But it will say, most of the a lot of times that Kenwin has come in, we haven't really played to his strengths, in my opinion.
Sure, but I mean, this team's not going to do that. That's why I like Brandon Vasquez more.
But I do believe at some point, if you've got a guy that's as accomplished as Kenwin Jones, and we're not, and he's worthless, that's not his fault. Like, at some point, you got to look at the coach and be like, hey, coach, we've got, you know, and we're playing, you know, if, you know, when you go to New York and you play on the tiny field, you've got to look and be like, hey, this is the best way to line up is naturally with a big, tall striker, okay? At some point, we've got to be tactically aware enough as a team, even if it's the players and not the coach, tactically aware enough to be like, hey, this is how we're going to play. This is how we're going to open up space, you know? And it's not like we're the first team that's played with a big had a big, tall striker on the field, you know? And it's just different.
Here's my big concern about a guy like Kenwin is he negates a lot of the value that Almiron gives you, in the sense that,
because he clogs up the middle.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, and we're Arsenal fans. We've seen it all for years with Giroud and Mesut Ozil. Mesut Ozil's strength is picking out passes in behind. Giroud's best is holding the ball up and clogging the middle. So if you don't have anybody that can stretch a back line, get in behind, you're kind of limiting what, you know, an Almiron or Ozil or any of those kind of guys do. And that's why you saw such great fluidity when Joseph was in, because Joseph's movement off the ball is insane. Like, if you haven't paid attention to a game, if you just kind of like watch the game and don't really pay attention to individual, you know, nuances of the game, watch Joseph Martinez's movement. His movement in and out, checks in, out, you know, all of his goals are pretty much a product of just unbelievable runs that he's making.
Off the ball runs.
One of the most impressive things about Josef in the first few weeks was the off the ball runs he was making. Obviously, he scored some great goals too, but the reason there was so much space was because of the runs he was making off the ball.
Here's the thing. We only saw those runs in two games.
Yeah.
Let's be real about, because everyone thinks that Josef coming back is the, and he very well might be, but let's, like, don't get too optimistic too soon, because we've seen him in two games, really well in two games. We saw Tito Villalba really well in two games. We saw Julian Gressel really well in four games. That's a better indication of what Gressel is on the right side than Josef Martinez is up top. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I'm just saying, let's make sure he is that player that we all think he is.
What I'm saying is that we've also seen the team play well, kind of trying to play the same way with Tito Villalba up top.
Yeah.
And you're really going to have to try hard to convince me that that he's not a better player than
Villalba. No. I do think he's a better player.
I do think he's a better player.
Don't get me wrong, especially up top in that position because of those runs that he's made in those two games. But it's the consistency that I'm looking for right now. I've seen the raw ability.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing about Martinez. There's no way he was going to keep up the pace, the goal scoring pace.
Sure, that's not what I was looking for.
I don't think the innate ability to create space, make runs, and all that goes away. Like, I don't think that's just something that can't translate from game to game every week. Now, I do think that the MLS will adjust to him, and he'll have to figure some things out, but that's, you know, that's going to be on him to figure it out. I don't think it's going to negate him at all.
Let me make clear. I'm excited he's coming back. I think that he drastically improves the frontline attack of this team. I just need to see the consistency before I'm like, hell yeah, he's back.
Because
we didn't really see it. We saw the bits of movements, but we didn't see the impact he had in the, 25 minutes, 30 minutes that he came in. We didn't really see that impact.
I think the game was just so wonky that they never got into the game at all.
And that was my problem, is that when he came in, I thought, this game, you need to go fast. Yeah. You need to get up the field fast, and all they want to do was possess. And I thought, man, this team is built to sit back and counter on you. Why are you waiting?
Okay,
you saw moments where it was either Yamil or guys on the wings that just, were playing 2-foot passes to each other. I'm like, guys, go. Get up the field. Yeah. That's the strength of his team. Go. And they didn't do that. And that's what I thought ultimately cost them the game.
The other thing is, and it's kind of back to your original point about, we were talking about the tactics and the adjustments, is the other aspect of Joseph being injured is not necessarily the drop off between Joseph and Tito or Joseph and Kenwin. It's the 11 to 12 or the 12 to 13 players. So now with Martinez coming back in, one of these guys has been starting all the whole time is now going to be of service off the bench. Whereas like a Yamil Assad could come off the bench. A Julian Gressel could come off the bench. A Larinowicz could come off the bench. And they give you more than a Kratz or...
a lot of sense.
I don't think Larinowicz is going to the bench ever.
He's been playing. But, I mean, he's essential to the way we play right now.
But my big point is, now you drop one of the regulars onto the bench, and now they become a dynamic sub off the bench.
Gotcha. Yep. No, here.
And okay, so who do you think? Because obviously Martinez, assuming you put him at the center forward.
Oh, what do you do with Gressel?
I think
you're going to see Villalba out wide because he is the DP. And yeah. I mean, as much as Martino wants to say that, he doesn't care so much about the money, he's going to play Villalba first and see how that goes. Kenwin was the exact same way. Yeah. Look, I'm sure he knew Kenwin is the fittest style. He's not dumb. Martino isn't a moron when it comes to this stuff. He knows that Kenwin Jones isn't a guy that fits his playing style. But he is getting paid a lot of money, and he is one of the first signings in Atlanta United history. He is a notable name that, guys like Matt Doyle have been clamoring to bring to MLS for a long time.
I mean, yeah.
You got to see what he has. You can't not play him.
He started in the Premier League for six or 7 years in a row.
You can't just look at that and go, no, he doesn't fit. We're done. You can't do that. You have to give him a shot. And so he gave him 4 games. He didn't do well, obviously. He scored goals. Sure, he scored. He had moments. But over the course of the entire 4 games, I think it was 4 games, right, that he started, he just didn't look great. The team didn't look great. It looked really like a disaster up top, and the way we did score goals was more off lucky bounces than anything else.
And
crosses to Kenwin, the 2 times that he was able to get him on goal. But I think the same thing's gonna happen with Villalba. If he goes back onto the wing and we see the same sort of performances we saw out of like the first 3 games where he just did not look well, and I'm back on the hate train for Villalba, I think you'll see Gressel. And until then, I think Gressel is. Unless you have a knee in the midfield, I think Gressel's on the bench.
You can correct me if I'm wrong, but if we're going to be running forward like we like to and just having so much space, I think Gressel fits in better than Assad. I feel like...
I just wonder how he looks. I mean, Assad has looked fine on the left side.
He's looked fine,
but you look at Gressel, he's clearly right-footed.
Yeah, I mean, I
and
guess
so you can't. And the moments Gressel has looked good is going to his right and using his right foot. I mean, that's where I Yamil has been, to me, has been fine, especially since he's kind of cut out the theatrics a little bit. But I don't know. I'm really hoping that, and Alex Johnson on the Facebook feed brings up a good point. Martinez's hair. First of all, everyone said it was blue.
I thought it looks like a mop.
It looks silver.
On his head.
Didn't it?
Yeah. It was like grayish. Silver-ish.
I didn't see the blue. Maybe it was the TV. I just didn't see the blue.
Yeah, on the broadcast, it didn't really look
blue. It looked good. It looked fine, but...
It is what it is.
My girlfriend was like, he went into a salon and said, do this to my hair. Which I thought was hilarious.
He got his hair did.
I heard blue. Clear. To me, at least on TV, it did not look blue.
No, I thought it was sort of like a... Chrome-ish.
I'm so happy to have him back. I really hope he gets a good amount of time in the U.S. Open Cup game on Wednesday.
Is he supposed to start?
From what I heard, Martino said that there's a possibility that he maybe starts the game, goes 45, and then is done.
Okay.
So we'll see.
What I will say about the whole situation we're talking about, though, is right now we're trying to figure out who's going to start. In a month or two, especially like once we actually start playing games at the Benz,
we're going to have to rotate.
It's a ridiculous amount of games. It's like, what, 5 games in 2 weeks or something like that? We're going to have plenty.
I think it's like 7 games in 18 days or something. Something stupid.
It's something ridiculous like that. We're going to be very happy. We remember this conversation of saying, oh, we're going to have to put Julian Gresso on the bench. We're going to have to put Tito Vajabo on the bench. We're going to be playing everybody during that period.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have Brandon Vasquez.
This is why I want them to go far in the I want them to. I want the youth players to get a lot of good experience in the U.S. Open Cup.
I'd
especially,
also like us to win a few games, so we can do that.
No, that's why. Because at the very least, look, if you win it, fantastic. That it would obviously be a great goal. But I really, for more than anything, I just want them to get the experience so that they can fill in those roles. I think Carlton's going to be asked to do a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Come that quick stretch.
Well, the good thing is, even some of the guys that have filled in never really looked out of place. I mean, they don't look like glaring weaknesses. You know, when McCann comes in, he looks fine. When Kratz comes in, he looks fine.
Even when Carlton came in against Houston, he looked fine.
Yeah. Okay. Let's back up a little bit and look at this game specifically, because I think one of the guys that has looked rough the last two games is Gonzalez Perez. I think, obviously, having given up 3 set-piece corners against Montreal, And the only reason I bring up Montreal, I know that we've talked about him before for everyone listening on the podcast right now, but just because the U.S. Soccer Feet guys are here, this is kind of what you do with people that you haven't talked about soccer with in a while. But looking at those 3 goals and then, or sorry, at least those 3 set corners that led to goals because seemingly he didn't defend well or something to that effect. You look at that, and then you look at the goal he sort of was kind of at fault with. Look, I initially blame Michael Parkhurst for Montreal. Did I say Montreal? Vancouver is what I meant. Vancouver is what I meant. Sorry. Yeah. So you look at, again, I initially, for especially against Chicago Fire, I blame Michael Parkhurst for trying to take the ball up the middle of the field. And I like the thought of it. But look, once you're in that open space, once you have kind of drawn in some defenders, as a center back, you got to get rid of that ball real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
he held on to the ball way too long. I think he'd be the first one to admit it. And that obviously leads to Gonzalez Perez either, I don't know if it was laziness or just didn't recognize the situation, but somehow Akam is onside, and then it leads to the goal.
Well, it's crazy because both of them were there. There were 2 guys there, and like they were unaccounted for.
Nikolic was, yeah. Well, and it's the thing. I think Gonzalez Perez's hope was assuming that they were both going to be offsides.
Yeah,
and it wasn't the case.
Still got to run back.
He was the one. Well, he was the one that was keeping him onside. Yeah. And if you're going to keep him onside, then yeah, you got to run back.
Even if he's 100% sure they're onside, this is MLS. You don't always know. I don't know how it was in Argentina, but.
Look,
you can't trust Lyman.
Initially, I thought that was offsides. Again, I'll trust Martino because, I mean, he's not one to just
back the ref.
Yeah, he's not one to. I mean, he did it. I'm trying to think of the game.
The time when he kicked the ball.
And then the red card. I think against Montreal, where Gonzalez Perez, pushed him in the box.
That in the Assad elbow.
That one I don't remember him saying much about the refs. I think he might have.
I know that
he's not one to shy away from calling out the refs. But in this case, he basically said we confirmed it on video replay so that he was onside. So that's the case. That's on Gonzalez Perez.
The thing is, even if they do mark him offside there, they had several other chances that they completely. I think it was Akam who just completely whiffed on a ball. Like they, I think Nikolic played him across. Like across the face of the goal.
It was a very similar chance. It was a very similar chance like 5 minutes before that. Or maybe 5 minutes after that. Whatever.
Exactly.
It was
that happened multiple times. So even if that one would have been offside, there was plenty of other times the Fire could have just scored that one instead. Like we almost got lucky that the Fire missed as many chances as we did early on in the game. or else it could have been even worse.
You know what's crazy? And this is exactly what I thought about. Have y'all ever played pickup basketball?
Yeah.
And, like, you play full court, and, like, some people just get tired and cherry pick, and just it doesn't really turn into much of a basketball game. It's what it looked like, the soccer version. It felt like both teams were just like, all right, we'll send it long. You go. You go try and score. Okay, now you go try and score. Because we had a couple times where we got in behind them too. And
that's the other aspect of this I want to talk about. I think Bijanba had arguably one of his worst games.
I just don't think he's that technical.
I'm not gonna disagree with you. I think
he's shown flashes of technical.
Look,
ability.
I think if Joseph Martinez is the same player we saw,
Joseph Martinez scores both of those goals
before he got hurt. Look, I'm not gonna say he scores both of them. I say you have a better chance. Yeah. I think he scored at least one, but he's clearly the more technical player.
We definitely have a view
at least.
Of
he's let's put it this way: he's the better finisher. Joseph Martinez.
Yeah,
is.
Yeah.
He's our only clinical finisher of anybody. I mean,
he had a few. He did have a few misses.
Have you seen some of his kind of long shots from outside the box?
Yeah. I don't think Almiron's clinical. I think he's
really
decent
good at soccer.
Finisher. Like, just because you score doesn't mean you're a good clinical finisher. Yeah. Like the goals that Joseph has scored are goals that no one else on the team could have scored.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And I'm not saying that he wouldn't have scored in those moments. I don't like doing that because then you start assuming a lot of things. And when you assume like that, you start placing more blame than you should on guys like Tito.
Right.
It's kind of like the old cliche of, oh, if we were playing a better team, they would have finished that goal.
Exactly. Come on. There's a reason you play the games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can't assume anything. And so I'm not saying Joseph Martinez wouldn't have scored. I'm not going to automatically assume he would have. But I do think that put in that situation, he does a much better job. I think Joseph dribbles around the keeper, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like he's done before. So it's not that I can't wait to see Bijanba go back out right to see if maybe he's like, all right, I've got another chance to do this position the right way, the way I know how to do it. I got Joseph Martinez back with me alongside me. I can play it into him. I'm much more confident on the ball or on this team now. I'm much more confident in this league, whatever the case may be. Whatever his mindset was in those first three games that made him look so bad, in my opinion, hopefully that's gone. And he's much more confident now, and he's able to do a lot more going forward than just kind of receive the ball and shoot.
Yeah. The other thing that Joseph gives you, and I know we obviously touched on this, Vijalba has never really struck me as someone that really knows the nuances of center forward, like the kinds of runs you need to make.
I think he's more a second forward. So, yeah, I mean, he looked great when I thought he looked fine. Not great, but like he looked better than he did on the wing when he was that second striker to Joseph Martinez the couple of times he was asked to do that.
Yeah, and here, I don't know how to phrase this exactly. He makes good generic runs. Like the runs that everybody knows how to make. Like if you've never played forward, everybody knows, how to run in behind.
Run diagonally.
Yeah.
Well,
Joseph knows how to, knows the nuances of how to drag defenders, because if you even watched him in the Chicago game, he's checking back to the ball. I don't think, and I haven't watched Bijanba in as closely as I probably should have before I say this, but he doesn't make those checking in and out and, you know, peeling off and all those runs. He does
sometimes. It's not
right.
He's asked to really do more than anything, just go forward.
Yeah,
go forward
it's like and, okay, send it over top. I'll run onto it, and he's fine with that.
It works a lot better when it's outside. I mean, you think of the goals.
Yeah.
You think of the goals that Almiron scored at Houston or at home against Houston with Gressel making the runs on the outside, him making that cutback pass to Almiron. I could see Vijanba doing that exact same thing. So I think, especially now that he's more accustomed to the league, because, again, he was not very good the first few games.
I thought his goal against New York, I think it was it New York?
The really nice one?
Yeah, where he drifts out. Yeah, he drifts out wide. That was, that was a Martinez run.
Yeah, very good run.
Exactly, that was perfect. And it wasn't that he ran hard. He just kind of drifted away, gave Yamil Assad a chance to play that ball in between the backs, the two players there on that back line, and he did it all. He did the rest himself. We're yet to see that consistently, with him at least in that position, and with him on the wing, we haven't really seen him. In that position consistently at all.
It would make sense tactically looking at it that he would have more space, which is what he likes.
Yeah,
and that when Martinez comes back, he's going to feel a lot more comfortable. And hopefully the first three games were more of a – he didn't play well because he was still getting used to the team.
Yeah.
And it was more of a form issue on his case than a real issue of him just not fitting in well. Because it seems like he's going to fit in great when Martinez is making all those runs and you've got such a high level of an athlete running in behind.
Yeah, and
Dijalba.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think Chicago Fire just had a better game plan. I mean, you mentioned that they didn't play well. I thought they did exactly what they needed to do.
Yeah, MLS win ugly, you know.
You look at the one goal, the big chances they had were mostly on these counters.
You know,
fast breaks.
You know, and your cohorts in the studio always talk about the Peter King theory.
Yeah, yeah.
We have that, like, we kind of do the same thing. We look at... And I know other people have used this term, like everybody's who's a fan of college football, like everybody thinks their offensive line is terrible because they watch their offensive line every single game.
Yeah.
So everybody thinks their offensive line is terrible. Well, we can microanalyze everything, but in reality, if you look at the scores across the league, everybody else is doing the same thing. Nobody's winning on the road.
No one wins on the road.
And
that was actually something I was looking at. You look at the number of games you have the road. We've won two, lost four, and drawn three. That is a total of
and our road
nine
trips
have
an exact like that. That's where geography.
Easy road trips, yeah,
yeah.
The geography of us.
We've had the most road games, and I mean, I don't think this is a revelation, but we've had the most road games than anyone.
Three Canada trips,
sure,
two West Coast trips.
Yep, and we're kind of done with that. I think the furthest we're going to go now is Kansas City.
Yeah.
So we're 3-2 at home. Look,
this is something that none of these guys have ever done.
Here's the positive. We're still in eight in terms of the Atlanta United losing against Chicago Fire, which again, it's a worse loss than I think. Look, I think Rob Ushery had a great article because we keep as fans, I think we immediately want to blame the refs because MLS, and I promise you it's not just MLS, but it's confirmation bias.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said earlier, anytime an MLS ref does something wrong, you immediately think, oh, it's because he's an MLS ref.
Unless it's Mark Geiger, then it's legit.
Then it's Mark Geiger. But, I mean, refs miss calls all across the world.
It's a
problem with refereeing, not just MLS refereeing.
It's a problem that probably would never be
say?
Solved.
Yeah.
It was something about Rob Ushery.
Oh, he had a great article in the sense that, you know, we should stop blaming the refs because that's immediately what we point to whenever whenever something happens. I wish the players would take that same mindset. And the thing I love about Yamil the last couple of games is that he's kind of stopped doing the theatric diving, the complaining. I've seen Gonzalez Perez, he loves doing that. I think on a number of occasions throughout the rest of this season, is he going to get caught on a quick restart because he's complained to a ref. I can totally see that happening. But we're still in eighth place. We're still, you know, we're at 18 points. The Revolution are above us in seventh. Again, both of us are underneath the red line. They're with 20 points. Red Bulls have 20 points. Columbus Crew have 22 points. Orlando City have 24. NYCFC have 24. That's 6 points. That's two wins in a row versus, you know, who knows what happens to these opponents. This is we're still very much in contention for, you know, a home playoff.
Yeah, that's kind of the big thing I've noticed it kind of.
It's too early to freak out about the playoff spot.
Well, not only that, but, you know, what was our expectation going into the year?
Make the playoffs.
Yeah. Exactly.
And just make the playoffs.
I think we've all gotten this. We see some of the quality of our players, and we kind of forget that they're still new. Like, there's still a new team. Like, it's not going to be – look at Toronto. We're not going to be Toronto.
Yeah, and I think, when you
– My thing is, though, I want – the course of the season is
grueling season.
Very MLS. Once you get in the playoffs, though, that's – a completely different animal.
The cream will rise to the top in the playoffs, you know, but over the
course
of the
season.
I just think as fans we lose perspective,
but that's kind of how every fan of
but
every...
But here's the thing. I think we can go into in a playoff setting, and we're putting the cart way before the horse with this. This is very fun, just kind of general Atlanta United conversation. We're actually going to have a kind of a tactical breakdown and kind of a U.S. Open Cup preview tomorrow or early Wednesday. But you look at what happens a lot of times in these... Look at Atlanta, for example. I think they're set up better to do well in playoff play.
Mm-hmm.
in either elimination game type scenario. Well, maybe not elimination games, but like
because you need special players.
When it comes to you know aggregate situations, you know what's the phrasing?
The aggregate
of those games.
The home and road.
Yeah, the two-legged games.
Yeah.
That to me is I think Atlanta United actually kind of fares better in those situations because of how they come out in these type of games or how we've seen them come out for the most part. First of all, Chicago Fire I think was the first game where we didn't score first.
Well, and the other thing,
in a playoff scenario, that's fantastic. If we're the team that consistently scores first, that means that the opposition probably is going to play very defensive-minded to start the game just so you don't get that goal first. And what happens then? Then Atlanta United dictates the tempo of the game, controls much more of the game, at least early on. I mean, we've seen it change throughout the course of a half, that tempo, that momentum. But
the good thing for
I trust this team that they can score first in that kind of a scenario.
The good thing for us is nobody aside from Toronto has separated themselves from
us. Believe it or not, Chicago Fire have, too.
Chicago's getting close to it, yeah.
Look, Toronto's at 29 points. Chicago Fire's at 28.
How many games have they played?
15 games played. We're actually sitting at 14 games played. Montreal Impact is at 13 games played. So that's another factor you got to consider is that we still got a game in hand to five of the teams above us, and two games in hand against Columbus Crew.
That's really why this weekend. It's just you can only do looking at the table this early.
It only does so much.
It only tells you so much.
Yeah, we were talking about this. Last week, I guess we were like, it's annoying to look at the table because all you're doing is math. Like you're just like, oh, okay.
You can see yourself in ninth place, but the team four spots ahead of you has played three more games.
Yep.
And and like I said, I think you know we let our perspective change a little bit. I think that's what we need. We need to still stay grounded. And it's like you were saying before. The season, you were looking at the schedule or whatever, and you're like, okay, where do we want to be at the end of that long road trip? You want to still be in contention.
You want to be when that final seven game home stretch comes about.
No. I was talking about that first, like when y'all are doing the podcast before, when y'all are looking at the schedule, you're like, okay, as long as we are still
in contention. Oh, by the time we hit that,
yeah, by after that. What Portland game? I guess it was when we start getting more. And
oh,
more
gotcha!
Home
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You still wanted to be within reach,
yeah,
or within striking distance, which we are. And the other thing is, it's easy to look forward at the schedule. Nobody thought Chicago was going to be this good,
and they could very well still finish bottom of the table by the end of the season.
Yeah, because I mean, I haven't looked at their schedule so far. I haven't looked at any of these teams' schedules, so I know what our schedule is, and I know it's been rough. We played three games in Canada, two games on the West Coast. You know, right out of the gate, we haven't been done any favors, thanks Georgia Tech. But yeah, anyways, we haven't been done any favors, and we're still within striking distance. Yes, we're gonna have our clunkers. Every MLS team does. It's a grind. This is where some fans that are new to MLS, we always view things in a European sense.
Hey, you can't do that.
Yeah, because we're like, oh man, you can't lose games because if you drop points, it's crucial. It's vital that you can't drop points. Because the top teams don't drop points very much. Well, in MLS, everybody drops points all the time.
A lot of parity. And if you drop points against your Eastern Conference opponent, or if you gain points against your Eastern Conference opponents, you're moving up in the table.
Yeah.
And you're only looking, I mean, again, in EPL, you lose three games in a row, and it's crisis mode. And MLS, you lose three games in a row, and you're also looking at every other Eastern Conference team. You're behind.
You've lost four points in the
exactly.
Standings.
You're not losing. You're not dropping from third to 15th or whatever.
Yeah.
But all right, we're gonna stick around for about five more minutes. If anyone on the Facebook live chat wants to throw us a question to answer real quick, again, we'll have a more in-depth recap and kind of a preview of the U.S. Open Cup and more Atlanta United stuff coming up tomorrow and early Wednesday. Just because with the U.S. Open Cup. It's kind of a fun week for us, considering, well, one, we want to see, we expect to see guys like Andrew Carlton. We expect to see maybe Chris Gosling get in the mix. We expect to see Joseph Martinez start and hopefully do well against,
I saw where
which should be, sorry, Charleston, a weaker side, one of the more weaker sides that we've seen Atlanta United face.
They're going to be missing one of their best players, am I right?
Romario Williams.
Yeah,
he won't be in. And not to disc.
And I have no idea if he's one of their best players. I just assume.
I mean,
he's
one of the best players in USL right now. But you know, not to discredit everything Charleston's doing. It's because again, Atlanta won't be sending out their number one team. So look, as much as I hope this is a win for Atlanta United, this isn't a guaranteed.
Oh, and we get to see, you know, some of our.
Tam Backus might get a start in the U.S. Open Cup.
Miles Robinson.
Might see Miles Robinson.
Was a 2-game loan, or was that a full season?
Miles Robinson is with Atlanta.
Oh, I thought you were talking about them trying to play for. Because didn't he play for Charleston?
Miles Robinson?
We got him from the draft. He never came to.
He might have. I forget if he went over there for a spell, but it wasn't anything too. It wasn't anything big. But again, we might see Tam Backus for Charleston. We might see.
What's the deal with that? Because
we're going to see Bloom more than likely.
As long as they're on loan, you're allowed to play against your own guys. I know that. I'm just excited to see the youth, guys that we haven't seen on a regular basis play.
What everybody has to remember is that even if we do happen to lose this game, we're getting the young guys' experience. We don't know what the lineup is going to be yet. But if you do have a lot of guys like Chris Goslin, Tam Backus,
I think it's going to be a healthy mix.
I think the
positions where we have capable backups.
I think you'll see Chris McCann.
So I think we'll see Miles Robinson for Parkhurst. I think Parkhurst is going to get a break.
Yeah, well, both fullbacks will probably get a break.
Who's the other fullback?
I think Greg Garza will.
Greg Garza needs a break. He looks like he's about to
die. I
want to
say he
time.
Does need a break. I also think that, I mean, him and Mikey Ambrose, I want to say that Mears is more likely to get the break than Garza is. I think Garza might come off at halftime.
I'd like to see Mears or Ambrose or whoever. You know,
are we gonna,
there's gotta
be
some
I just don't. I know, and I agree. I just don't think you're going to see like a complete.
Oh yeah,
a different 11 for Atlanta United. I think you're going to see Bloom in for Mears. I think
she played well.
Who's going to be the other center back?
Walks. I think you'll see Walks and Miles Robinson. I think you'll definitely see.
Okay, so
Garza might be like the one guy that's like, all right, well, let's keep.
Yeah,
I know he bombs forward, but let's try to keep at least some kind of. Consistency, or some kind of like
because what you don't
some kind
like,
of experience in the back in on that back line.
Because the danger is if you change the whole,
you're changing the chemistry of the team
and you
too
could,
much,
and it could go to hell. I mean, it could just look awful.
Right. I don't think that's going to happen, but I think you'll see like Lorenowitz, still in. I think you'll see Miguel maybe play 45. I think you'll see Andrew. I think you'll see. You know what? You might even see Goslin. In that Lorenowitz role.
Really?
I wouldn't be surprised if we see Kratz for the full game.
Kratz, I think, will definitely play. I think if Peterson's ready to go, which I have no idea if he is or not, but if Peterson's ready to go, I think you'll definitely see him play.
The only ones
I really don't want to see play, I don't care if Miguel plays or not. I don't care if Ijadva plays or not. Yamil, I don't care if he plays or not.
Yeah. You know what you're getting with them.
I mean, I would almost prefer them not to play. I that's what I mean. I don't want Yamil. I don't want Villalba. I don't want Miguel to play.
That's the way I'm feeling about this game.
Joseph, I want to play. If you can get Kenwin, or Kenwin won't be there. Will Kenwin be there? No, he won't be there. He'll still be international. Brandon Vasquez, I want to play. I don't know where you'll put Brandon Brandon Vasquez. I think that's one of those things where
I think
maybe
it's a
45-45. Yeah, if Joseph Martinez starts the first half, I think you see Brandon Vasquez in the second half.
That's fine with me.
I also don't know, and if someone on Facebook wants to educate me real quick, I don't know if the substitutions change in U.S. Open Cup.
I believe it's still three.
I'm sure it is. Yeah, I just wonder if that might be a – because, I mean
– Are we going to see
FA Cup,
a fight?
They go four.
Are we going to see
No. I mean, this is going to be a friendly thing.
Okay.
I think all but like 90 tickets have been sold. Last I checked, all but 90 tickets have been sold for
it's at KSU.
Is there a
Fifth Third Bank?
Is there a Terminus Legion or are they doing a
I'm sure they are.
Yeah,
I don't have any.
In the email set they said they were. I think it was from 4:30 to 7:30 tailgate and then they have their own section if you bought tickets with them.
Someone mentioned and I really wanted to bring this up because I thought where was it? I thought it was a good point that needed to be mentioned. Someone mentioned that the Open Cup wasn't, and I have no idea how to pronounce this person's name. I apologize. You know who you are. Aliakas?
You're good.
The Open Cup wasn't sold out due to weekday schedule and I-75 North traffic, in my honest opinion, which I promise you, traffic has nothing to do with any kind of scheduling.
Because I would, I'd be willing to bet most of the Atlanta United fans are in the northern suburbs.
They know it's going to be from.
At 7:30, it's not going to be that hard.
Look,
to get up to
I promise you, I promise you, traffic has no it doesn't play a part in when these games get scheduled. I promise you.
I think what he's probably saying is people who live in whether it's
he's saying it wasn't sold out because of the weekday because
people didn't because
it's on a Wednesday and because of the traffic.
If you work in Atlanta,
it's
you're not going to be able to get
here's the thing.
You know?
It's not. I don't people know what traffic is. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
Braves games get. You know, at the very least, 25,000 a day, and it's in the pretty much the same area. So that's not an issue, I promise. And he asked, should we start games at 8 or 8:30 next time, or should we play at another stadium? So I actually put in a word with, asked for some kind of response from Atlanta United in terms of, you know, give us more. I get it. One, I guarantee you the contract issue, there's no contractual obligation for Georgia Tech to allow us to play the U.S. Open Cup game there.
Yeah. I'm kind of glad it's not.
On top of that, you don't expect on a weekday to sell 45,000 tickets.
No, even Seattle doesn't play.
Exactly.
They play
no
their,
team plays in
Seattle
their normal
stadium.
Seattle
plays their U.S. Open Cup games at their old stadium they played at back when they were in the USL.
Right. So you just don't expect to sell that many tickets. You know, I think it's something like 10,000 for this game. I think
it's 8.5, I believe, is the capacity.
So you're not expected to sell
it
out.
It would the optics of it would look so terrible if we were playing.
Oh,
at
Bobby
Georgia
Dodd.
Tech, you know?
Yeah, no, yeah. No, thanks. So
like, we're not Chicago.
On top
we?
Of that, it provides U.S. Open Cup is a lot of these games. You have a very intimate atmosphere, and there's nothing more intimate than really minimizing the size of the stadium.
We could always play at Silverbacks Park.
No. But you also want to, I mean, with something like the U.S. Open Cup, again, you're going to have people that are like, weekday game, I have my family, I just got off work. No thanks. I'll watch it on the stream.
Yeah.
And most people, I would be willing to bet most, because what you have in Atlanta United games is you more than likely at every sporting event, you have the overwhelming majority of people are the casual fans. Casual fans do not care, will not care about this U.S. Open Cup game.
They might not even know, like, outside of the fact that that they found out about it this week, there will be people, you will see tweets going, oh my gosh, Atlanta United is playing tonight? How the hell did I not know? Way to go, Atlanta United. Way to let your fans know. And I'm like, that pump the brakes if you're one of those people. But there you're right. There are people that won't know that this game even exists.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of reasons they go to a smaller stadium. It's because they know going into it, they're not going to sell as many tickets. And they're not supposed to sell that many tickets.
Well, and from a branding and marketing perspective, it's kind of a good move, too, because then you
branch out to other stadiums. You go closer to home to maybe, you know, the suburbs of Kennesaw and Marietta and that area. You
and
branch out a little bit.
Go to those games.
Exactly.
Yeah, and
it's just the nature of what it is. I mean,
yeah. Exactly. This is not
to FA Cup games. Not as many people go to DFB Pokal games.
These games, everyone knows going into it that the starting 11, I mean, I guarantee we'll get the questions, where's Tito? Where's Aldemiron? We're not playing. We'll get those questions on social media. That's just not how this works.
I can't wait till we lose and then freak out. That's gonna.
Yeah. Oh my gosh! Yeah. And here's the thing: I would love for Atlanta United to go after this cup hard. Yeah. I would love it because getting a trophy year one, regardless of what it is, would be awesome. But this is a tremendous opportunity to get the young guys in that you don't normally get to see play. I
mean, it's like all the big teams.
Because look, it's USL competition, and again, I'm not crapping on the Charleston Battery because they're a fantastic team. It's still USL competition. This is a great chance to get your young guys in, show what they got. This is where the youth cream rises to the top.
We should take the European, the big boy style approach.
I mean, what do they – see, here's the thing.
In FA Cup, what they do is they start all the youngsters, and if the youngsters carry them to the further rounds, then they bring in the big guys in.
It's amazing that the same approach wouldn't be kind of thought of here.
Right.
But you are going to see the people that, you know, freak out if we were to lose, if we don't beat the living snot out of Charleston Battery, which I don't expect that to happen. I honestly expect it to be like a 2-1, 3-1 type of game, and it could be either way.
Because it matters to them more than it does to us.
Yeah, and that's going to be
I think it's different because we're a brand new team.
That
I think for the young guys who aren't playing.
And if this is your first ever game.
Yeah, this is the moment where like, hell yeah, this is my time to shine. I want to ball out.
Right.
Guys like Andrew Carlton are going to go 110%. Yeah. Chris Gosson's going to go 100%. If he plays, he's going to go 110%. Miles Robinson's like, I want to start on this team in the future. this is where I'm going to make it. Walks is a guy that is on loan.
I have no idea how he's in the Tottenham system.
I don't know.
He should just come over here. I mean, what future does he have?
Well, I don't know what his mindset. I don't know what his mindset is moving forward.
He seems to love it here, man.
Yeah. I agree. You've got guys like Yamil Assad is still on loan, but I think it's just a matter of time. I'm trying to think who else, but you've got players like that. Mm-hmm. You might see O2 in U.S. Open Cup. You saw him against Charleston Battery. This would be a perfect time to get him into the game. I think they're going to play all the Atlanta United players, Charleston is.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Hey, and I'm saying, even if we lose, we can just keep sending them over there, and they'll get experience through Charleston going through the Cup.
I just think that the expectation should be get our youth guys in, you know, really expect a win because they're really good young guys, young players. But at the same time, you know, don't act as if the world is coming down because we lose this game. This game is ultimately,
I agree,
in the course of the MLS season, meaningless.
Even if we do,
it's not a friendly. It still means something.
The Atlanta United game is meaningless.
In the course of the overall Atlanta United season, again, if we win this game, I am of the belief that Atlanta United should go after this cup hard.
Yeah.
But hard doesn't mean that they need to play all the regular 11 starters because we know how hectic the schedule gets. That's a big ask for the normal starting 11. I don't expect that. I don't want that. I want the young players to win it for us.
If we do lose this game, there's going to be a subset of fans who are furious about it, asking why we didn't play our best players. At the end of the day, Tata's going to be fine with it. The players are going to they'll understand. They'll get over it.
They want to win. They want to win too. Don't let us give you the impression that they don't want to win. But at the same time, they can keep it in perspective. I think a lot of the fans are going to be able to keep it in perspective. A lot of fans are going to understand.
That's what you have
because a lot of these fans are going to look back to things like the FA Cup and they're going to be like, all right, well, this is pretty much the same thing.
This is actually
even
more like a.
I tried to explain the concept of the U.S. Open Cup to one of my friends who's just not into soccer in general, but he kind of likes Atlanta United because they're here. It was so hard to explain to them just the concept. How it's going to be a lot of the fans. We lost a game. We got kicked out of a tournament. Well, it's still fine, though.
It's not the end of the world.
Exactly.
It'd be nice to win. Don't get me wrong. I really want them to win. I really want to see these young guys do well because if there's one thing that Atlanta United has been, I think they've been rightly praised across the board for the most part, but the youth talent on this team and in the academy is tremendous, and I think that's a big, this is going to be a big test for them to show not only the front office, the coaching staff, but the fans that look, we're here, get excited about the future of Atlanta United, and this is a big opportunity for them. You guys got anything else? I'm done.
Yeah, I'm tapping out.
We are talked out.
Yeah. All right. So, again, we'll have a – thanks to all the Facebook Live feed people who jumped in and listened to us. Let me see. And who's Burley Guzman? Mm-hmm. Says, love you, Aaron. Hey, that's my handsome nephew. Love you, Aaron.
Oh, yes, my aunt. I had to think about it.
Thanks for all the people checking us out on Facebook Live, on the Dirty South Soccer Facebook Live. You can follow us at MOTS Podcast on Twitter. Email us at MOTSpodcast@gmail.com. I am at Eric G. Quintana on Twitter. The U.S. Soccer Feed guys are at U.S. Soccer Feed.
Right.
And that's it, man. You guys got anything else?
Nope. Hey, it was great. Thanks for having us on.
CrossFit Vesuvio, our sponsor. If you want to donate to the podcast, patreon.com/MOTS podcast. That'll do it. See you later, Facebook Live feed. And until next time, see you later, Atlanta.
Later.
Bye.